Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary specialty and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state of Maryland, the number is 1-800-492-5538, and their banner is on the Steiner Show website. You can click on that as well. We are joined here in studio, Dr. Matthew Crenson, Professor Emeritus at the Johns Hopkins Department of Political Science. Has not seen him in a long time. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Good to see you.
Really good to see you. Joined by the phones, I won't be seeing her, but one day we'll see her again soon.
I wish. I'm multitasking and flipping the content pancakes.
I
here.
Bet she
I'm
is
sure
right
you
now.
Are. Fern Shen, founder editor of the Baltimore Brew.
I love the Baltimore Brew Market. It's a great site.
Guys.
Congratulations on the brew. I remember when we first used to meet,
having
breakfast about this new online look thing, and you just doggedly kept to it and made it happen.
I just, against all good sense, I do wonder some days, but I'm having a good time.
Congratulations to all of us that you've done that.
But thanks.
Let's talk about this State of the City speech. And let me actually turn over to you, Anthony, with a little leadership and commentary here since you were there and you're steeped in this.
You know, Mark, I guess I've written about four State of the City addresses for different folks, different mayors, since we instituted the State of the City address about 1999-2000. I think we did the first State of the City address here in the city. I think that Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, she gave her second State of the City address a little over a year ago. She took over office after the resignation of Mayor Sheila Dixon.
Right.
It was not, I would say, her best moment in last year's State of the City address. It wasn't a horrible speech. There was a lot to say. She had to come up with it very quickly and give this address shortly after taking office. A very different Stephanie Rawlings Blake delivered the State of the City address today. She did all of the standards. You know, she had to talk about her accomplishments. She offered several new initiatives. And she gave a look forward to some of the challenges that she plans to attack vigorously. It is a campaign year. So I think that we saw a very animated Stephanie Rawlings Blake at times, very different from her traditional style, straightforward delivery. Mark, she talked about public safety. She talked about education and the gains and things that she was very proud of in those areas. She talked about challenging economic times, $120 million gap in last year's budget, about an $80 million gap in the upcoming budget, and the things that she believed she led the city council and others on, of course, those were taxes to close that gap. And she talked about a way forward and some of the issues that she's very concerned about, domestic violence. She's concerned, obviously, about how we maintain a strong economic base, how we find jobs for people in the city of Baltimore, and how we move to economic development beyond downtown into neighborhoods. And I think all of those themes that she gave today will be themes that her many opponents we'll be talking about as well. I talked to a couple of them tonight before I got here, and they said she was very short on specifics. They thought she gave a great maintaining maintenance mayor speech, that she talked about the everyday governing, but didn't give any kind of vision or what they call groundbreaking initiatives that will really excite people in the city of Baltimore going forward. Now, they have obviously vested interest in calling her speech short and missing the mark. But I think it was very interesting. And as someone who studies these, who watches these, I think it was received very well. I do, however, wish, and this is what I would say to the mayor, she wouldn't ask me, but I would say to her, I do wish she was much more specific in certain areas, including how we are going to meet the ongoing economic challenges. I mean, it was very clear how we met them in the last budget cycle, five or six very specific tax increases. She put the police and the fire up first, only to pull them back and protect them in the budgeting process. She's doing it again, but she said today the police, protecting the police and fire, are her priority again. It's a very interesting thing to say you need a mayor to be much more specific. I'm not sure how much more specific she can be this early in the budgeting process.
I think what struck
Shen.
Me hi there. What struck me was that nobody's got those specifics yet. I mean, neither the incumbent nor the challengers, really. And she was trying to make that point very strongly, and it's having tried to tune in a little bit to Otis Raleigh and what he is saying and sort of how he's positioning himself, this seemed, you know, like a really sort of strong, you know, smack back, to put it bluntly, at the whole question of, okay, you know, Otis Raleigh has said he wants to, you know, cut property taxes. And so she said, you know, she talked about mindless austerity. She talked about, you know, sort of how do you do that? Responsible austerity, you know, means we have to protect the vulnerable. So she was trying to, you know, sort of position him as somebody who's, you know, potentially in a kind of a la-la land there with that, and say, what can you really do? Give us some specifics. So I think that charge is very valid, and it kind of cuts both ways.
I didn't hear the speech, but I did read it carefully. And I think one other thing you have to take into account here is what people are saying about Stephanie Rawlings today and what they were saying about her when she took office. When she took office, there were doubts about whether she could even do the everyday job of mayor. Nobody's talking about that anymore. She's been able to handle that. Now they're saying she doesn't have vision. So she's come up several notches in local political stature, and that gives her a firm base to respond to her critics like Otis Raleigh. I think of her also as a back-to-basics mayor, which is very sensible, especially for a city like Baltimore. No economic development plan is going to work here without safe streets and good schools, and that's what she most strongly. It's interesting. She's tried to protect police and fire. The hostility between her and especially the police union, but also the firefighters, doesn't seem to have been diminished one bit. She's managed to make friends with the teachers. In fact, they had a representative there, not the president, Marion English, because that would have been too much.
Too early for that. That's right.
But they seem to have composed a kind of detente that hasn't happened with police and fire. And that, I think, is going to be the biggest challenge for next term.
Let me just say this political thing, which you just – well, everybody's mentioned police and fire in their comments so far. And the thing I always think about the police and firemen's union is that they don't vote.
Because teachers, so many of them.
Really
teachers do.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They live here.
That's right.
That's a big difference in terms of the...
Well, and in general, public employee unions, but especially, are very powerful, and part of it is a matter of turnout because they belong to what's called the attentive public. They, their friends and relatives, are going to turn out to vote if they live in the city. But if a larger number live outside, as in the case of many police officers, their political impact is that much less.
So what do the three of you think about, did the speech hit it? I mean, in this election year, I mean, a lot of people say that, you know, she's got so much money, nobody's going to be able to beat her. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but I mean, but go ahead, Fern.
Well, I mean, I think she was trying to grab for those segments of the city that seemed to be slipping away. She talked a lot about tech. She tried to position herself as, you know, you heard the word change, and you heard talk about, you know, trying to find, you know, new technology. She talked about, you know, investing in emerging technologies and the technology center. And, you know, she even criticized the BDC. So she was trying to, you know, stake a claim to some of this, you know, I'm going to shake things up type of tone. Whether she really got it or not, it's pretty hard as an incumbent with the fat coffers to come across like an outsider. But you could see her working it.
Yeah. Well, one thing that her critics haven't mentioned is vision costs money. It costs a lot of money, and the city just doesn't have it right now. I think that her main task, and it's the one she's addressed head on, is just to hold on for dear life and try not to go under.
And I think that, Mark, she did herself very well today in. I think she took a very open and honest assessment, and I'm sure her critics will disagree with this, of where we find ourselves. And she talked about it being painful, the economic situation in this city being painful, and that we are going to go through more pain. And she said that we must find a way to take advantage of the opportunities we have, and that's the emerging technology centers in the city, mm-hmm. and finding jobs for young people that meet that growing need. And as Fern said, she even said, look, We have to do things differently in government, including the sacred cow among many people's eyes, the Baltimore Development Corporation. She said, we are going to restructure BDC and give them three new focuses: real estate, emerging development outside of downtown. And there was one other that I have in my notes that I don't want to shuffle a whole lot of papers to find. But I think that was very significant.
Yeah.
She said, we're going to do it differently. And I think that really has to help her.
Yeah, do you think, Anthony, that she would have said that if her critics weren't hammering on the BDC?
No, I think there was definitely a motive to it. But I was very impressed that she held one of those agencies that people look to, certainly as one of the money and economic generators of our city. BDC has a lot of critics, and she reached out to them.
And also they have a lot of autonomy, which – and I read into her comments possibility that Jay may be reining them in.
That's right. A little more oversight of this very important group.
How did they phrase it? I'm looking my little thing here. BDC will also hire a new consultant to serve as an economic development financial czar to help move more projects to completion. So, you know, they're talking about things like the West Side, which is kind of on everybody's mind right now.
And the East Side, which is now on people's mind because of the Daily Record story.
Yeah.
Well, an appointee, I should say, at Johns Hopkins. Perhaps I shouldn't even comment on this. But I think that's
no longer there, though. You're retired. You can
I'm
do what
emeritus,
you want, right?
But he's there.
I'm there.
Can they take away your emeritus? They don't like what you say?
They could, I suppose. It wouldn't cost much. that could turn into a real liability. It's not entirely under the city's control, but the city is definitely involved. And as the Daily Record series has shown, it has not panned out as planned. The more money has gone in, including city money, than was originally anticipated. The development is not proceeding on schedule. The biotech hasn't come in in as big a way as was anticipated. It has a lot of critics, and that could possibly – there is one other thing, too. That it's a small thing, but has great symbolic importance. That's the Baltimore Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to find a lot of her critics picking up on that.
Yeah, Otis definitely does.
Carl Stokes did in this office.
In the story about Vision, he questioned that spending money for fixing all of these streets for the Grand Prix, and we still have problems getting people off the streets during snow.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting. I think that if we were betting people, and certainly full disclosure, people should know, and they probably heard me say this a lot on your show, that I work for Carl Stokes for his council office. And
I should say that, although it wasn't, I have worked for Scarlett.
I believe Mark has not.
And Fern
probably
hasn't.
Fern probably hasn't.
What'd you say, Fern?
I said, I can't think of anything I have to declare.
But Mark, I think that she did herself extraordinarily well because over the last couple of weeks, Otis Rowley, Carl Stokes, Jody Landers, and others really have been taking hard hits at this mayor. And raising the question that, as our good friend Matt said, last year, Mark, there were real question marks. I think in many ways she used this speech, and she's used this very focused style, this very focused, very different style than Sheila Dixon, certainly very different from her mentor, Martin O'Malley. She has used the style of get back to the basics. I want government to run. I want government to work. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this campaign pans out.
Let's see what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. If you heard the mayor's speech, read about the mayor's speech, it's online. You can read it, which I did this afternoon. I couldn't be there, but I did read it all. And we're here with my co-host and dear friend, Anthony McCarthy, who is here every Monday evening with me, and two people who look at the city a lot and know it well, Matthew Crenson, Professor Emeritus at the Johns Hopkins University Department of Political Science. I've been coming on the show for almost as long as I've been on the air.
I was a child when I started.
I was even younger. And Fern Chen, editor of the Baltimore Brew, 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air. Hi, Leo, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Leo.
Good evening, Anthony.
Good evening, Leo.
How you doing?
We're well.
Okay, I guess I'm concerned about what she did not say. I would remind you that last year for summer jobs for youth, we only funded half of the youth works jobs in this city for the youth. Of course, our primary focus has to be able to create jobs in the inner city for adults, but we underfunded the youth. I can't quite understand that, but be that as it may, police community relations. I know she talked about police and fire and in a general kind of way, but I think given the magnitude and the seriousness of the problems that exist, she needs to talk about her vision for improved police-community relations. I think the current status of police-community relations are horrible. I would also advance this thought that if, looking at the inner city, we were to speak in terms of providing seed monies, government seed monies, and technical assistance for persons working out of their homes, home-based businesses tailored to the education level, skills, and talent of the residents, I think that would take us a long way toward at least addressing the concerns of those in the inner city. We talk about the Grand Prix and the Inner Harbor and a lot of other things, but we have two Baltimores, and we need to be very candid and open about how we're going to address the needs of ordinary people.
Mark, I would agree with Leo in the aspect that when we started talking and the mayor mentioned creating jobs in the city, and then she immediately went through to talking about technical jobs, this new and we see a lot of urban areas moving in that direction. We see a lot of municipalities having to move into we just aren't the same blue collar factory cities that we were at one time. But she is going to have to, and really all of the candidates for mayor are going to have to speak to that extraordinary population in the city that is underemployed and unemployed and unfortunately are not qualified for this emerging technology that we keep talking about. And you mentioned the series in East Baltimore. If you read that series carefully, the biotech in East Baltimore is all but dead. The jobs that were promised, the housing that was promised, the opportunities that were promised there have not come to fruition. And now that the can has been opened, I think a lot of people are wondering if it's even going to happen. So we have to find a way. Mayor Rawlings Blake and the candidates for mayor are going to have to speak. And as Fern said, you know, it's hard to ask people to be more specific at this moment.
Right,
but they're going to have to speak on how we employ, Mark, that population that does not have the education or the experience to fill those emerging technology jobs that we're counting on so greatly.
The one thing that she did, the one time she did sort of go in that direction, she talked about Baltimore's 60,000 drug-dependent citizens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
About, you know, we won't treat them as a liability. We're going to create, she talked about a Baltimore Recovery Corps, you know, that there would be an
volunteer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a volunteer initiative to identify, you know, 100 individuals. You know, symbolic, I guess, in a way, but you know, I mean, it's 100 individuals, and she did sort of go there. So she really kind of didn't entirely fully dwell on the technology and kind of the white collar, but tried to address, you know, as our caller was saying, the other Baltimore that's so often ignored.
There is another thing she could have talked about that I think Otis Raleigh has emphasized. That's transportation. The Baltimore metropolitan area, the Maryland general, ranks very low in transportation. A few months ago, CNBC came out with a listing of states in terms of business resources. Maryland ranked about 46 or 47 out of 50 in transportation. And this is a place where you could make the match between those people who don't have high-level skills and jobs. Jobs exist out in the suburbs for security guards, for warehouse workers, and the problem is people can't get there.
Mm-hmm.
You could also create jobs within the city. In fact, one of my classes looked at this a few years ago. The jobs out in the suburbs are scattered. You can't get to them by regular mass transit. So you could have little entrepreneurs in the city run van programs to carry people out. In fact, the state was willing to finance this.
Well, you know, that's funny. That actually came out years ago. I had this show almost 18 years ago on that very issue.
Isn't that something?
And it came out of the Urban Institute in New York, a conservative urban think tank. And I bought into it immediately, that suggested that we allow our bus stops to be used by inner city people who have their own vans insured, inspected.
Bonded.
Bonded. They can take people, pick them up, take them to work, and drop them back in the evening.
Right.
That could put several hundred people to work just driving the vans. B, it could get maybe thousands of people from Baltimore City to jobs that exist in the county they can't get to here.
You could even
that is a really innovative idea.
A relatively small sum of money. You could help people by giving them grants or loans, say, buy the vans.
Right. I mean, that is an idea that's the kind of stuff that's what the Sun just wrote, the other newspaper besides the Baltimore Brew, that wrote in a second opinion piece this evening. that said it was a great speech in terms of laying out some ideas, but it lacked vision, lacked that kind of vision. 410-319-8888, Clarence, you're on the air.
Gentlemen, thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm really not impressed because I have not heard anybody come up or say a plan that reaching out to major corporations saying, asking, what can we do for you as far as tax incentives and possibly even helping you to build a plant on some of this vacant property or large areas of vacant property within the city? What can we do for you to help you want to relocate an industrial size, an industrial type of job back into or around the city of Baltimore? That's what I'm interested in hearing. All of these other plans seem to be plans of creating jobs in the service industry, which is not going to support people with families or make this city have enough to fill its tax coffers. The way to fill the tax coffers is not to be a tax each individual, but to be able to bring corporations in, offer them a tax incentive so that they can employ people to fill the tax coffers. It's like going backwards to me, and I have not heard anybody say, we've put this major plan on the board.
Okay.
And we're
only interrupting, Clarence. We only have a few minutes left before we have to go to break. And Anthony, did you want to respond?
One quick thing, and I'm certainly my colleagues have thoughts on this as well. Mark, that process, that theory that the caller just shared with us has not worked for us. And certainly the city finds itself economically in a very difficult place of needing those tax dollars and not being able to offer those kinds of incentives without it costing the city an enormous amount of resources. Resources that the city there is a whole movement right now looking at how you incentivize bringing businesses, how you incentivize development in this city. And unfortunately, when you look at both sides of that coin, it appears that the developers are winning in this idea of bringing business and development and growth into the city, and the city's not getting the return. And it's going to impact our bond rating. It's going to impact a lot of things if we don't find a better way. And I agree with him. I think it's certainly something to be discussed. Stephanie Rawlins did talk about that today. She talked about the reuse of the Under Armour, reusing
Tie Point
and you reusing that once detergent factory that's been already redone, but using it for Under Armour and this wonderful company that's really helping sustain Baltimore.
If the caller didn't care for Stephanie Rawlings Blake on this topic, then he'd like Otis Raleigh even less, perhaps. Just looking at my notes from his live, and some people, a lot of his supporters love Otis for this, but it's just a different way to go. He wants to go turn more to small and startup businesses. He said chasing after the Fortune 500s, we don't get anything out of that. It's sort of like what Anthony is saying. It seems like the mood, the tide is against the snag the big corporation gambit.
One thing before we have to go, we have a few moments here, so we'll try to get another couple calls here. But the mayor touched on in a way that all her opponents have been screaming about, which is cutting the property taxes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That to me may be one of the huge debates of this campaign coming up, that she kind of made a slap in her towards Otis. what was the word she used? She called it austerity.
Hold on. I'm sorry.
We'll find it in a minute. But
yes.
So what about this issue of property taxes?
It's a relief. Baltimore City has twice the property taxes of the surrounding suburbs. And it's obviously a disincentive for people looking for houses to buy. But as Anthony just pointed out, we make the problem that much worse when we give tax breaks to industries that are going to get tax increment financing, for example. That just keeps the tax rate up for everybody else. And it doesn't generate that much. The idea that we're going to be able to bring industry, manufacturing back to Baltimore is not a realistic prospect. In fact, at this point, it's probably not realistic for any city in the United States because those jobs are already gone beyond our borders. And so we're going to have to look for new kinds of jobs, new kinds of businesses.
As another taxpayer and journalist, Fern?
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I'm going to have to go off the grid and live off the land. It's sort of depressing. But, she
she's pointing out that there's going to have to be a, you know, it's the day of reckoning here, and she didn't have any answers, but she hinted some places where she wants to go with, you know, trying to deal with this fiscal problem. You know, she said the city spends, you know, $250 million a year on employee and retiree health care benefits, and, you know, that we spend more on employee benefits than we do on our whole police department, and she made a point
of repeating that.
That's right. I think she picked the police department not entirely by accident.
I agree. But, yeah. Mark, she said something right here, and I'm going to read this whole, but I'm going to read it quickly. She said, some may irresponsibly choose to ignore and mislead on these fundamental questions, talking about tax, property tax, especially when discussing property tax relief. A real vision for the city begins with treating the people of Baltimore with honesty and respect. If it sounds too good to be true, it isn't true. If we fail to put truth behind politics, Baltimore will fall backward, and that is unacceptable. A city that lives on falsehood and false promises is a city that's dying.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the mayor's people, and talking to them today, they're a little frustrated by some
most
of this,
definitely.
You know, good publicity for the challengers, and this is the point that they keep wanting to bring home. You know, we'll tell you straight, we won't sugarcoat it.
Well, we'll see, and of course we'll continue this as the election is happening now. Which I just saw on another news website that Kwaisim Fumi, according to Nick Diadamo, city councilman,
that's right,
is not going to run.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But we know all the others who say they're running, including State Senator Catherine Pugh, mm-hmm. And Jody Landers may be running.
Mm-hmm.
Otis Raleigh
is running.
Though there's political rumors that Otis Raleigh may be moving over to the city council president's race. That could be true. Could be not true. Who knows? These are all rumors. And of course, Carl Stokes seems to be adamant about his running for mayor. And others, I'm sure, will jump in the race.
I think you're right.
Fern Chen, thank you so much. Editor of the Baltimore Brew. Good to have you with us.
Keep up the great work, Fern.
Thanks, guys. A quick plug for a little project we have, State of My Block. If you feel like the state of the city doesn't quite get at your reality, go to Baltimore Brew. We have a little question for our readers. Send us your thoughts. What is the state of your block in the past year? Tell us how it's been going on the street level.
Well, that's great, Fern. And I'm looking forward to your new webpage. I see you're about to put something new up, and we'll all look forward to that.
Yep. Will do.
Matthew Cranston, great to see you, my friend.
See you.
Always great to have you. See, we have you. Great till morning. I'll let you know how to get here. Professor Emeritus from Johns Hopkins University,
that's right.
Department of Political Science. Folks, we're going to take a very brief break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Cole Agar. Cole is a recent graduate from the American University of Cairo. He was in Tahrir Square today. He's staying in Cairo. We got him through another friend of ours who are university professors at American University. And as much as we can every day this week, we'll get reports from Egypt and others who are watching what's going on there. This could be one of the most momentous political happenings in the history of the modern world, I think. We'll talk about that and more. Stay with us.